Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kendall Roden, Cynthia Krang, Kale Teeter, Evan Vasilik, Russell Young, and Sajid DeMello discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please visit our website at azpodcast.com.
Welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 288, being recorded on the 17th of July, 2019, with special guests Romit Girdhar and Tolu Agunbiade. I'm Sajid, and on Teams with me, I have Russell, Cynthia, and of course our special guests. And before we get to them, just a minute, let's just do a quick roundup on the Azure news. I think there's a few items that have come up just because we've had some conferences and whatnot, and they like to announce stuff at these conferences. And Russell, I know you've been kind enough to add a few tidbits in there. Why don't you go ahead and get started?
Okay, thanks, CJ. Yeah, I think there's two or three that kind of caught my eye. One of them was the preview of a new service called Azure Data Share. I don't know if you've heard of this before, but it's to solve this problem that a lot of businesses have whereby they want to share some data files with another company, that, so it's outside of the remit of their normal Active Directory domain. So the governance goes out the window, and they go and they set up an FTP server or something like that, and they set up some cron jobs or some batch tasks that happen that go and upload their data sets off to their customer's site, or they build specific APIs to try and receive and send that data and allow this kind of rogue network of data going between businesses. So the Azure Data Share has been created to try and get around this problem and include all the governance and the great security and compliance features that you get with Azure and do it in a nice way. So effectively, you can go into the portal, you can create a data share service in there, so there's no hardware or infrastructure set up involved. And then you create a share and you say, right, I want to share out the contents of this blob storage, or you can use an Azure Data Lake as well as your storage account. And you can go quite granular with it as well. So you can pick specific folders or specific files even within those data stores. And you can add that as a share and then publish it out. And you send an email invitation as part of the process, goes out to that other company. They can then accept that invite, which then produces or sends them basically to a link within their Azure portal where they can create a data share service and accept that invite. And it will then transfer that data from your company to their company into their data storage and their Azure subscription. And there's some really nice features in there about being able to say, I want to synchronize this data on an hourly basis or a daily basis, for example. So it's great for all those companies that want to do that sharing, but still apply the governance and security to it. It seems to be an age-old problem that nobody's ever really solved in a very consistent way, and people just invent their own ways about getting around it. So I thought that was a really interesting one.
That is a good one, yeah.
The other one that's kind of close to my heart, being working with Microsoft partners all the time, is a new product called Azure Lighthouse. And this is to allow partners to better manage their customer estates. So if you can imagine an ISV or a managed service provider who has got hundreds, maybe thousands of customers, and they've got resources in those customer subscriptions out there to go and do things like update them, monitor them, just managing that estate of different resources is a real nightmare. It's a very difficult thing to be able to do. So Lighthouse fixes that by allowing you to pull those resources. It basically mimics them within your own portal, so you can see them within your subscription and manage them as if they're your own. You can then set up policies and apply those policies to all of those customers in one go. So it's a really nice way of enabling management at scale for our managed service partners, basically.
Excellent. Let me tackle a couple of them over here. One of them is close to me, given that I love AKS. So AKS is our Azure Kubernetes service, managed service. And in the past, when you create an AKS cluster, the agent nodes, all the nodes that you were in your cluster, they just kind of put into your region in various places where it makes sense. Often they're in the same data center, or they're they're not necessarily spread out in a way where you're guaranteed to have some sort of fault or update domain sort of scenario. So now with the availability of the availability zones in AKS, you can now create your cluster saying that, hey, I want to create a cluster with availability zones, which is something that we're used to having in the IaaS space. And with that offering, when the AKS cluster is created, it will be, you know, the nodes will be created in different data centers, such that, you know, how in case there's a flood or a power outage in one data center, your service will still be running because other nodes in other data centers that are far away enough will still be up and running. So I thought that was a nice feature.
Nice.
Useful. And very useful. You know, customers have been asking me that, and kind of like related to that, almost in the opposite spectrum now, right? We're used to having customers are used to saying, okay, I want to have my servers spread out as much as possible. Sometimes even, you know, across regions, right, across the globe. For disaster recovery. But the problem with that approach is that the distance between your servers now increases, and sometimes that can be a problem for your application. The latency may be too much if one server has to talk to another server, and that server happens to be somewhere else, maybe in another data center or maybe even in another region, it could be slow. So if you have those kind of, you know, scenarios where you need servers to be physically close to each other for latency purposes. Now you could, there's a new feature, preview feature today, announced today called Proximity Placement Groups, which allows you to say, okay, you know, I want all these servers to be in the same data center. Therefore, they'll be on the same, you know, fiber backbone or whatever, or the gigabit backbone that they use, and the latency will be as low as possible. Of course, that comes with the, you know, with the knowledge that, you know, if the data center goes down, I'm going to lose all the service. But again, these are for scenarios where you really need that close placement. And of course, then you would have another system set up in another data center somewhere else as your fallback. So that's something that they've announced today, and we'll put some links to that in the show notes.
I think related to that and low latency, I don't know if you've read Evan's notes there on ephemeral OS disks.
Oh, no, I haven't. Have a look through that.
So that's the ability to create the storage disks, the OS disks, basically, on the local VM as opposed to on Azure storage. So for stateless workloads, it makes a bit of sense there. So instead of that latency that you'd get by talking to a storage device, even that might even be in the same building, this is going to be lower latency again because it's right on the same actual physical machine.
That's nice. Very nice. Indeed.
So if you're just doing fast re-imaging, scale sets and so on, and you've got a solid boot state that you want to get back to, it's an ideal way of doing it, really. They're free of charge, apparently, as well, so no storage costs for that disk that you're using.
Excellent. What else have we got? Anything else you want to talk about?
I got something else that is kind of along the lines when Russell was talking about Azure Lighthouse. So Azure Resource Graph is now GA'd. This is actually a relatively new service that I didn't really know about or understood until today. And it is essentially seen as an extension of Azure Resource Management. Some of the features that it provides in addition to ARM is that you can actually get an overview of your entire cloud environment across multiple subscriptions. So this is a great way to kind of understand how your Azure governance is actually in play. And something else within Azure Resource Graph that's currently in preview is that you're actually able to see changes made in your resources. So you're able to query for within a specific time frame, you're able to see like what are the fields that have changed and when has those changes came into effect. So from a governance and from a going to the cloud is scary because we don't have control anymore, this is really a way for you to get a good grasp of what your current cloud environment looks like and what are all the different security or other policies that you want to put in place that wasn't in place yet.
I can see that being very, very important with some of our customers. How often have you been in such a situation where, you know, hey, it worked yesterday, it didn't work today. Okay, let's go see what changed, you know. Excellent. Nice one.
One more then. and it's just, again, something that's quite close to my heart. So talking about migration and adoption of cloud, we've just kind of launched the Microsoft Cloud Adoption Framework. So if you're in a company, you're listening to this podcast because you're aspiring to get into the cloud, you play with it at home maybe, but you're having difficulty convincing your company of how to go to the cloud and what it's all about, the Cloud Adoption Framework is a set of guidance and information about not just the technology, but also the people side of things and the business transformation side of things. So there's some great reading guidelines and resources there that you can use. And it's great just to read through anyway. There's a lot of best practice there about, you know, how do I migrate? How do I make sure that the team and the staff and the resources are ready for it? What can I do to prepare for it and so on? So that's really useful. And it's really good resource for anybody that's having that conversation or looking to move to the cloud in the near future.
That's great. Thanks. Another update we wanted to mention this week actually comes from Kale Theta, who unfortunately wanted to make sure you guys had the update but couldn't make the call. So he has asked to record he's recorded the message, and we're going to play it back right after this.
One other thing I wanted to call our listeners' attention to is something that's related to blockchain. There's an event called TruffleCon that happened last year around this time, and it's actually happening again this year. This time it's actually happening at the Microsoft campus in Redmond, Washington. So we're hosting the event. The event will be on August 2nd through the 4th. And basically, it's for anybody. It's an amazing conference to learn about blockchain development. So anybody who's interested in, you know, smart contracts or any of the underlying development that's involved with, you know, supporting these type of technology on blockchain, this is the event for you. You can learn from the experts who are building a lot of this the tooling and different pieces of frameworks that go around this. There's a huge community that's surrounding Truffle. It's well over, you know, I think even almost close to 2 million downloads at this point. There's amazing speakers for multiple disciplines, everything from, like I talked about, hardcore development to crypto and legal. It's also very diverse crowd. The speaker list is actually 14% female this time, so that's actually an awesome thing from a diversity standpoint. And the sponsorship has been amazing for these guys. So essentially, they were able to lower the ticket price to $99. So if you can get to Seattle, or if you're actually in the Seattle area, in Redmond area, you know, come by, you know, take a look. We'll put the link in the linked up for you to register. Very, very, you know, small fee to get into this, and it's a really good way to connect with people who are really driving this industry. Microsoft's a big supporter of this, and love to have more people come out. So check it out.
I think, Russell, that's a good roundup on some of the news. I know Evan had some items in there, but he wasn't able to join today. He's on a customer call. So why don't we defer some of the other items for the next week when he's on, and we can cover some of them as well. Is that okay?
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks. I don't want to keep our guests waiting much longer. All right. So Romit and Tolu, please go ahead and introduce yourselves for our listeners, and we'll tell us what you do at Microsoft and what your passion is in the Azure space, and of course, some of the work that you're doing with our partners.
Absolutely. So thank you, first of all, for having me on the show. My name is Romit Girdhar. I'm a software engineer with our commercial software engineering team, the same team as Sujeet. And my passion is data. And so I've been, you know, ever since I've joined Microsoft, just been a long time now, I've been focused on primarily data workloads, you know, big data processing, the likes of Spark, Hadoop, and NoSQL databases. So over the past year or so, I've been focusing primarily on this Oracle partnership that Microsoft and Oracle have embarked on. With that, I'll hand it over to Tolu.
Thanks, Romit, and good day to all the listeners. My name is Tolu Agunbiade. I am a program manager working in commercial software engineering. My passion is primarily data science. I'm a data scientist, but I work as a PM at Microsoft. I've been at Microsoft for 4 years now, specifically for the Microsoft Oracle partnership. I have been serving as the commercial software engineering PM for that initiative, helping with some of the engineering work streams, such as identity management for a single sign-on for the apps that are in scope for that partnership. I've also helped with coordinating activities around how we're going to monitor all of the workloads across the two clouds for this initiative. So those are examples of my involvement in this particular Microsoft Oracle partnership.
That's great. Thanks, guys. So, when Roman first told me about this partnership, and I was thinking, you know, Microsoft and Oracle haven't had always had the best of relationships. And so it's nice that we're getting together on this. Roman, how does this all come about? And you know, what's the first takeaway people should have when they hear about this?
Absolutely. And, you know, the conversation between Microsoft and Oracle actually started at our leadership level. Leaders from both companies felt that, we'd been hearing from customers that they'd like us to partner together to, provide our customers the flexibility and the choice and also the capability or the ability to reuse, their investments or make the most out of their investments in both parties. And so that's where the conversations really started. As the partnership, started evolving, we decided to embark on this journey where, we set out to interconnect the two clouds, especially in regions where we're located in data centers not too far away from each other. And what that allows customers to do. And again, this entire partnership is built on these three pillars, which is providing customers the choice to deploy services across Azure and Oracle Cloud infrastructure without compromising performance or reliability or scalability. The other thing is being able to capitalize on your existing investments and being able to leverage the investments that you've already made in both Microsoft technologies as well as Oracle technologies. And finally, we saw that there is an untapped potential for customers to be able to build workloads that we haven't seen yet, using services across both Azure as well as OCI, and services that you wouldn't think of, such as Azure Data Lake or Azure Machine Learning or being able to use, Oracle SaaS applications and running Power BI reports on top of it. So we saw all of these, all of this potential. And after speaking with a few of our marquee customers, it seemed like it's a move in the right direction. We've announced this about a month ago, and we've seen tremendous response and interest from customers wanting to adopt this and wanting to use this. So from a customer standpoint, I think this is it allows them to make the best out of both worlds, to take advantage of the capabilities that Azure offers, as well as the best-in-class databases and applications that Oracle offers in their cloud, and be able to marry that together and run as one cohesive and coherent application for the customer.
So, maybe a naive question for me, but what is the Oracle Cloud? I just don't know much about it. Can you just give us a high level as to what does it mean when you say Oracle Cloud?
Absolutely. So Oracle has a cloud offering called as Oracle Cloud Infrastructure. It started off with Oracle Cloud Classic, which is on the verge of being deprecated, and Oracle Cloud Infrastructure is what is taking over as sort of the new or the next gen version of the cloud. It started off as a bare metal cloud, so allowing customers that are already invested in Oracle workloads to be able to deploy these workloads on the cloud and very similar having a bare metal cloud service so customers can take advantage of it, plus having the flexibility and the scalability of a cloud. It has gotten to a point where Oracle Cloud has now grown. They provide similar services like Azure, but they're really good at providing Oracle Database as a Service. If you've heard of Oracle RAC or Real Application Cluster, you know, that as a service, and then also Oracle Exadata as a service. And so that allows customers that have existing investments in these specialized databases to actually leverage the cloud and be able to you know, migrate these solutions to the cloud and take advantage of it. Now, in addition to the databases, they Oracle also offers, you know, and a lot of times we tend to forget that Oracle is also known a lot for their industry applications, the likes of eBusiness Suite, PeopleSoft, JD Edwards, Enterprise One, and others. And so, you know, Oracle Cloud also offers SaaS versions of these applications, software as a service, and so it allows customers to also migrate these applications to the cloud and have the flexibility and scalability that and the reliability that Oracle Cloud provides. And so that's in addition to that, they also have other services such as bare metal service and VM instances and you know, very similar constructs to what we have. Just like how we have VNets and ExpressRoute, they have FastConnect and Virtual Cloud Network. You know, so there are very similar constructs, and so Oracle Cloud is obviously it is up and coming, but of course a lot of the constructs exist today in Oracle Cloud that have existed in Azure for a while.
Thanks for that. I wasn't really aware of what Oracle Cloud did today either, so that's a really good update and summary. Thank you. I was just wondering on the subject of networking, how that piece works. So, if I was to migrate, you know, lift and shift a typical on-premises application, I've got the application piece which I can move into Azure, push it into App Services or something like that. Is it as simple as me putting the Oracle database into Oracle as a service on the OCI, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure piece, and just changing my connection string? Is that all I'd have to do as a software developer? And how does the networking between the two clouds work? Is there VPN or a dedicated backbone there? What happens?
Yes, a great set of questions. So let me try and tackle them one at a time. So, so that's the premise or one of the use cases or one of the scenarios that we're trying to address using this partnership is the capability or the ability for customers to be able to deploy their application within Azure and be able to deploy their database on Oracle Cloud and actually communicate over a private network. And so, you know, it's very similar to being able to peer your virtual network in Azure to your virtual cloud network, which is very similar to VNet in Azure, you know, in Oracle Cloud. And so you're peering your VNet in Azure with your VCN in OCI. And that peering happens over an express route and a fast connect connection between the two clouds. And again, fast connect is the equivalent of express route on the Oracle side. And so it's an MPLS connection. It's high throughput, low latency, and we've managed to get some super super low latency numbers between the two clouds. Now today we've only enabled this in East US, but we are getting ready to launch other regions over the next you know, few months. The other thing to add is again all the communication happens over private networks, so you never have to go you know, over the public internet for any of your communication. Now that being said, if you have an existing ExpressRoute connection going from on-prem to Azure, or an existing FastConnect connection that goes from on-prem to Oracle Cloud infrastructure, you will have to bring in another ExpressRoute, because you cannot reuse the same ExpressRoute. Now you can reuse other services such as your virtual network gateway or your virtual network. Similarly in the Oracle side, but your ExpressRoute connection will be different.
Okay, got it. And so, the other question was on the software changes required to run the other cloud. Is it purely connection strings?
Absolutely. It's purely connection strings. You know, obviously, if you don't already have it, you know, adding retry logic in your application is super, super important, even if you're running on premises. And so making sure that you have that in any sort of cloud application is important. And we definitely recommend our customers to do that. The other thing I want to quickly call out is that, you know, even before we enabled this partnership, there were customers that have tried to do this before on their own using an intermediate service provider like Equinix. What we've done here is we've enabled the high throughput connection between the two clouds without needing an intermediate provider. So you're taking less hops in the middle, and it's allowing us to reduce the latency that you have to take in order for any of your traffic to go from your Azure data center into your Oracle data center. And so it, you know, it really helps us provide a low latency connection between the two clouds.
Clever stuff. Thank you.
Now, Ramit, you know, you mentioned identity integration. Is there some sort of hookup with Azure AD somewhere in all of this for single sign-on, maybe? How does that work?
Yes, absolutely. And so one of the, you know, interconnect being one of the main components of this partnership, we've also taken it a step further. So what we've done is we've integrated the identity. We've actually added the capability, I should say, of integrating identities together. So what that means is if you are an Azure AD customer today, or if you'd like to be an Azure AD customer, you can actually integrate Azure AD and federate it with your Oracle Cloud Infrastructure identity. And so it allows you to do single sign-on across Azure as well as Oracle Cloud Infrastructure portals with the same unified ID. And it's all backed by the goodness of Azure AD. The other thing that we've also done is any of the industry applications that you run, eBusiness Suite, PeopleSoft, Oracle Retail, or any of the SaaS portfolio that Oracle provides, you can actually integrate Azure AD with those as well. So you no longer have to manage five different or six different sets of identities across these different applications. You can use the same set of identity or the same identity across the different platforms, whether it's Azure, whether it's Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, whether it's a SaaS application like eBusiness Suite or even an IaaS application. Even if you host the application in IaaS, you don't really have to worry about having a different identity for all of these different applications. So it really takes your application development and also planning to the next level, because what we're trying to do here is provide a coherent and a cohesive experience for customers trying to deploy applications across the two clouds. We're also looking at other roadmap items, such as being able to integrate monitoring. If you're deploying applications across the two clouds, obviously monitoring or single pane of monitoring is very important. And so we're looking into that kind of an investment. We're also looking at other things such as, policy management. How can you manage policy, deploy policies across the two clouds using a single pane? Similarly, we're also looking at key management. So anything and everything that we can do to make it a cohesive experience for our customers deploying their applications or workloads across the two clouds, we're definitely looking into investing more and more into it.
That was the other kind of area I was thinking about was DevOps. So when you're deploying your application, you've migrated it, you know, what's the best way to do that orchestration so that you've got one release basically, and it's orchestrating both the Azure side as well as the Oracle side. Is that feasible, possible?
Absolutely. So today we've come together and we've adopted Terraform as our standard for deployments. And so you are able to, put together one cohesive Terraform script that's going to deploy across the two clouds. And there's no reason why you can't use Azure DevOps to orchestrate the entire process and your deployment and your tests. So, again, this is something that it's evolving as we speak, and, we're using our customers' feedback and our customers' feature requests to actually again, bring it back into our roadmap. But these are some of the items that we're actively looking into. And today we've actually enabled Terraform. You're actually able to automate the entire interconnect using a set of Terraform scripts. You're also able to automate the deployment of certain infrastructure across the two different clouds, especially as it pertains to applications such as eBusiness Suite and PeopleSoft and JD Edwards. And it's again, it's just the first step in taking this partnership forward.
So I have a go ahead, Cynthia. So for people that use PeopleSoft, does that mean they can now essentially pipe that data also into another Azure service and then start to kind of leverage some of the benefits of the Azure services versus some of the benefits of the Oracle services?
Absolutely. So if you're using PeopleSoft today, if it's on-premises, and if you're looking to migrate that to the cloud, you can migrate it on this interconnect partnership or this interconnect capability, and then leverage the data sitting in the database in Oracle Cloud and be able to use other Azure services or even something like Power BI. So that's a capability we've been looking to light up. It's not there yet, but we're looking to light up where you can actually use your PeopleSoft or your other SaaS applications or even IaaS applications and use the data from those applications and surface it via Power BI.
That's awesome. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Now, I know that when you talk about multiple clouds, the question that all enterprises want to know is who do you call if there's a problem, right? Like scenario that Russell just mentioned, app service running in Azure, the database running in the Oracle Cloud, and there's a problem. How does that work in this scenario?
Excellent question, Sudhir. So that's actually one of the first things that we thought about when we started to think through this cross-cloud capability. And so what we've done in that regards is we're actually cross-training our teams and we're integrating the support teams between Microsoft and Oracle for these kind of workloads. So customers, if they start deploying solutions on this cross-cloud capability, they don't really have to contact the support for both Microsoft and Oracle. They can pick up the phone and call either one of the support teams, and we will take care of triaging internally and actually helping you find your solution. So we're also integrating support together. Again, it's an important and critical part of any application development or any application lifecycle, I should say. And again, our goal is to provide a cohesive experience, and integrated support is a part of that.
That's great. Now, let's suppose our customers are not in Oracle Cloud, or they want to just use Azure for deploying Oracle databases or applications. Are we going to support that fully as well, just as well? I mean, I know we did in the past, but with this new partnership in place, what has that done to those scenarios?
Absolutely. So we've always supported Oracle databases on Azure, and recently we also announced Azure Cloud Simple. So for those of you who don't know what Cloud Simple is, it's basically VMware. Cloud Simple is a company, and they provide VMware as a solution on bare metal cloud. And so what we're doing now is allowing customers, and we're actually seeing a lot of customers wanting to deploy Oracle RAC clusters or Oracle Rack cluster, which is Real Application Cluster, on top of Azure Cloud Simple. So this is an addition to us allowing you to deploy Oracle database. In fact, if you go to our Azure Marketplace, you'll see a whole bunch of images that are published by Oracle and that are managed and updated by Oracle around Oracle databases, Oracle Linux, and also Oracle WebLogic. Where because of this partnership, Oracle is now also certifying Oracle applications deployed in IaaS across the two clouds. So the likes of the applications like eBusiness Suite and PeopleSoft, and I know I've been repeating these applications a lot, but it's actually allowing you to giving you the flexibility to deploy these across these two clouds, in an IaaS fashion, and Oracle is actually in the process process of certifying these applications. So it gives the customers a lot of flexibility to decide how they want to deploy their applications and their database workloads, whether it's Oracle database sitting in Azure or it's Oracle databases sitting in Oracle Cloud. And again, the underlying goal here is to provide the choice to our customers to across the two clouds.
That's really great. Nice, well thought out solution all around. Any more questions for Amit before we let him go, guys?
No, it's been a really good overview. Really interesting. Thank you.
All right, Amit. Any other parting thoughts from you? Is there some, we'll get some links from you and we'll put them along with the show notes so our listeners can go there for more information. I know you already talked about some of the roadmap items and stuff like that. Is there anything else you'd like to say before we close out here?
Absolutely. So I'll say that, this partnership is, again, where, we've announced this more than a month ago. Today, if you'd like to deploy a solution across the two clouds, if you're an enterprise customer, please reach out to us. We'd be happy to, get you set up on this interconnect partnership. And, there is a little bit of a whitelisting process involved at the moment. But over time, we'll lift that and you should be able to deploy seamlessly across the two clouds. Again, thank you for having us on this call and providing the opportunity to discuss this partnership in detail. I'm happy you guys have found this useful or helpful.
Excellent.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for coming on. Take care.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.